Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Pete Musto and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, 19-year-old Husna Ahmed arrived in New Zealand from Bangladesh on her wedding day. Her future husband, Farid, was waiting to meet her. They married a few hours after that, as their families had agreed. 25 years later, the life they had built together was torn apart at the Al-Noor Mosque in Christchurch. A gunman walked into the building and fired on worshippers last Friday as they were praying. Husna came across the gunman as he was coming out of the mosque. The gunman shot her on the footpath. After she fell, he fired two more shots and killed her. Farid was talking to a friend and was delayed in joining worshippers at his usual spot at the front of the mosque. Instead, he prayed in a small side room. Farid was able to escape when he heard the shooting began. When the gunman left, he returned to find many of his friends and community members dead. He provided comfort to those who were dying. He found out about his wife's death when a police official he knew called another family member as they waited outside the mosque. A total of 50 people were killed in the attack at Al-Noor and another mosque in Christchurch. Most victims were migrants or refugees from countries including Pakistan, India, Malaysia, Syria, Turkey, Somalia, and Afghanistan. Shafiqur Rahman Burian is a Bangladeshi diplomat in New Zealand. He told the Reuters news service that Husna was one of five members of a growing but closely connected Bangladeshi community killed. He added that four others were wounded. Members of the Bangladesh cricket team, which was in town for a test match against New Zealand, narrowly avoided harm. They arrived at the Al-Noor Mosque just after the shooting took place. Witnesses of the attack told Farid that Husna, instead of hiding, helped other women and children inside the mosque. She also ran to the front of the building to look for Farid. Farid said, "She's such a person who always put other people first, and she was even not afraid to give her life saving other people." People in Christchurch and all over New Zealand are deeply saddened by the attack. Farid said he has forgiven his wife's killer. He said, "I want to give the message to the person who did this, or if he has any friends who also think like this, I still love you. I want to hug you, and I want to tell him that I am talking from my heart. I never hated you. I will never hate you." A few hours after the violence, the front room of Farid's home near Christchurch was filled with survivors and friends. Many described Husna as being like a mother to them. At the time of Husna's arrival in New Zealand, there were almost no other Bangladeshis in the small city of Nelson, where the couple first lived. But Husna made English-speaking friends and was able to learn the language in 6 months. Farid said She spoke English with more of a New Zealand accent than he did. Fareed's co-workers at a meat packing plant agreed to work 30 minutes longer on Fridays so he could take time to pray. To thank them, Husna cooked a large meal every week. 4 years into their marriage, Fareed was partly paralyzed after being run over by a car outside his house. After that, the couple moved to Christchurch and Husna became his nurse. Our hobby was we used to talk to each other a lot, and we never felt bored, he said.
A Tanzanian woman is traveling around Africa demonstrating her soccer ball skills as a way to feed her family. Her name is Hadara Charles Mjeje. Short videos of her in action have received a lot of attention on social media. Last month, one of her videos even caught the attention of United States President Donald Trump. He wrote on the website Twitter, "Amazing." Mjeje started working on her ball movement or juggling skills when she was growing up in Tanzania. For many years, she played for a local women's soccer team. Mjeje hits the ball with her feet, head, and upper body, but not her hands. Mjeje is a 29-year-old single mother of two boys. For the past 6 years, she has been using her special juggling skills to help her support them. She asks for $4 for a 2-minute performance. She earns between $45 and $50 a day. She says the money goes toward sending her children to school and buying food for them to eat. So far, Mjeje has traveled to Cameroon, Burundi, Gabon, and Malawi to give her performances. At a recent show in Malawi, she told VOA, "There is no magic in this ball. This is my own talent I started developing long ago." In Malawi, her skill got the attention of the country's national women's football officials. They were interested in bringing her into their women's soccer development program. Mjeje turned down the offer. Sugzo Ngwera is the head of the women's football committee in central Malawi. She said that if Mjeje were ready to use her skills with other players, her organization would explore ways of working with Mjeje. Mjeje's skills have caught the interest of male soccer players too. Samuel Zeka plays social football in Malawi's capital, Lilongwe. He says it is a rare talent for women to juggle the ball as well as she does. "I would be very grateful if she would teach me such skills," Zeka added. I'm Pete Musto.
Have you ever gotten invited to a wedding? If so, who got married? Or will get married? Where was the wedding, and did you have fun? I went to 2 weddings last year, one in New York and one in Connecticut. Getting dressed up can be a lot of fun at times. In spoken English, the verb get sometimes replaces the verb be in passive sentences. We call this the get passive, and you just heard me use it several times as I talked about weddings. Use of the get passive is considered conversational, but it is sometimes the better choice, even in written English. It can provide a clearer meaning. And I am getting excited about today's program. So, let's get started. First, here's a quick refresher on active and passive voice. In an active sentence, the subject performs the action of the verb. The object receives it. Take the sentence, "I broke my favorite cup." The subject is I, and the object is my favorite cup. In a passive sentence, the subject receives the action of the verb. So, in the standard be passive, the sentence becomes, "My favorite cup was broken." But, in the get passive, the verb get replaces be. It becomes, "My favorite cup got broken." The get passive has two structures, get plus adjective and get plus past participle. For both structures, the verb tense of get changes based on whether you're talking about the present, past, or future. Let's first talk about get plus adjective. The verb get can be followed by some adjectives to express the idea of change or becoming something. We use this structure for people and things. We can talk about the weather getting hot or getting cold, for instance. A person can also get dressed up, get nervous, get hungry, get rich, or get sick. Here's an example with the adjective hungry.
What time are we meeting for lunch? I am getting hungry.
Notice the use of get in the present continuous verb tense. Get plus hungry is such a fixed English collocation that it sounds unnatural any other way. Saying, "I am becoming hungry," for instance, sounds so unnatural that the listener might be unsure of its meaning. Get can also be followed by the past participle, the form of a verb that usually ends in ed or en. The verb get expresses action, so for this structure, we use it with action verbs. Action verbs express physical or mental action. They include such verbs as break, eat, choose, and marry. Listen to an example.
His brother got married last year.
Married is the past participle of marry. And you remember this one from earlier.
My favorite cup got broken.
Broken is the past participle of break. For the get passive, we do not use stative verbs, such as know, believe, say, and understand. You cannot, for example, say, "The speaker will get understood." So, the get passive is used with action verbs, but the be passive can be used with action and stative verbs. However, depending on what is said, the get passive can offer clarity between an action and a state. Take the sentence, "His brother was married last year." Does the speaker mean his brother's wedding happened last year? Or that his brother had a spouse last year, but does not now? So, the get passive can help bring attention to specific details about a person or action. For that reason, we often use it to to talk about something either desirable, unexpected, or negative. Here is another example of a desirable event.
Vanessa got promoted to program director.
We also use it to talk about things that are negative or unexpected, as in this.
Please be careful. You don't want to get hit by a car.
And, of course, this next thing is both undesirable and unexpected.
The company's server got hacked last week.
But sometimes the get passive serves none of these purposes. Sometimes we simply use it to express everyday things in a conversational way. For instance, someone might ask,
"What time does the mail get delivered?"
And lastly, the get passive is used in some expressions, like some you already heard, get married, for example, plus others like get lost, get done, get ready, and get dressed. Some are idiomatic, while others are simply collocations. But they are so fixed in English that to say them another way would be terribly hard on the ears. Whew, I'm getting winded. I had better stop here. Remember to leave a comment on our website. We want to hear about that wedding you got invited to. I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Grover Cleveland was elected President of the United States in 1884. He was the first Democratic Party candidate to win a presidential election in almost 28 years. Grover Cleveland defeated James Blaine, a senator from the Republican Party. The election was very close. Many Republicans did not vote for their own candidate. They voted for Cleveland instead. They believed he was honest and that Blaine was not. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe tell us about the presidency of Grover Cleveland.
Cleveland began his administration by announcing that he would reduce waste in the government. He would make government more like business. He said he would support reforms to let ability, not politics, decide who would get government jobs. Democratic Party leaders were quick to protest. They explained to Cleveland that the party owed jobs to those who had worked for his victory. Cleveland had to compromise. He permitted about 80,000 government jobs to be taken from Republicans and given to Democrats. This left 12,000 jobs. These would be given to people who did the best on government examinations. Cleveland's decision angered Republican reformers who had voted for him. They accused him of surrendering to the leaders of the Democratic Party.
On other issues, however, Cleveland refused to compromise. He opposed government economic aid to any industrial group. He vetoed a bill giving aid to farmers whose crops had failed. And he vetoed another bill giving more money to men who had served as soldiers during America's Civil War of the 1860s. The president also showed his independence by investigating gifts of public land that the government had made to the railroad, wood, and cattle industries. He found that many of these land grants were made illegally. He got back much of the land. He opened it to settlers.
President Cleveland signed into law two bills he believed would improve government. One was the Electoral Count Act. It set new rules for counting the electoral votes of the states. It would prevent future disputes over presidential elections, like the one in 1876. The other bill changed the list of officials who could become president if the president and vice president died or were removed from office. First on the list, after the vice president, was the Secretary of State. Congress changed this law again in 1947, and there have been four amendments since then. Today, the Speaker of the House of Representatives would succeed the vice president as president. Then would come the president pro tempore of the Senate, and then the Secretary of State.
Grover Cleveland approved a bill giving the government control over the cost of railroad transportation. The bill was called the Interstate Commerce Act. It limited the amount of money railroads could demand from people who needed to travel or transport their goods. The law established the idea that the government could control industries when necessary for the public good. President Cleveland also was concerned about a growing number of labor disputes that took place in the United States in the late 1800s. He proposed that Congress create a labor committee to help settle the disputes.
Congress failed to act on this proposal, but its lack of action did not stop the rise of a labor organization that had been formed a few years earlier. The group soon would become the most important labor union in the United States. It was the American Federation of Labor, or AFL. Led by Samuel Gompers, the AFL was different from earlier labor groups. It did not try to put all workers into one union. Instead, it tied together a number of different unions and gave them general leadership.
The AFL was different in other ways. It did not oppose the economic system of capitalism. It said only that labor should get more of the earnings of capitalism. The AFL also opposed extremists who used labor protests to change the social system. What the AFL called for were things workers wanted immediately: higher wages, a shorter work day, better working conditions. One of its first demands was an 8-hour work day. This demand led to a number of strikes and protests throughout the country.
The most serious incident took place in Chicago's Haymarket Square. More than 1,000 union supporters went to a meeting there, organized by an extremist. They stood calmly and listened to speeches. Just before the meeting ended, someone threw a bomb into a group of policemen. The bomb exploded with a blinding flash. 7 policemen were killed. The other policemen began shooting at the crowd. Some people in the crowd fired back. When it was all over, 10 persons had been shot to death. 50 others were hurt. The incident set off a wave of fear and anger across the country. The public demanded action against union extremists. The Haymarket Square violence slowed the growth of organized labor in the United States for many years. It would be some time before labor became a powerful force in national events.
In the spring of 1886, President Cleveland announced that he was to be married. The ceremony took place in the White House. A few months later, President Cleveland and the First Lady went to New York City for the official ceremony welcoming the Statue of Liberty. The statue was a gift to the people of the United States from the people of France. It represented the alliance between their two countries during America's war for independence from Britain. The statue was the creation of French artist Frédéric Auguste Bartholdi. He decided to make a statue that would represent freedom, a statue of liberty. He said it should stand on an island in New York Harbor. There, he said, it would welcome all who came to America through that gateway.
Bartholdi decided to make a copper statue in the image of a woman, Lady Liberty. High above her head, she would hold a torch of freedom to light the world. The statue's face was the face of Bartholdi's mother. The artist asked French engineer Gustave Eiffel to build a steel support to hold the heavy statue. Eiffel was the man who later built the Eiffel Tower in Paris. The statue was built in France. Then the pieces were sent across the Atlantic Ocean. It was rebuilt in New York.
Grover Cleveland and his wife were not the only Americans to attend the Statue of Liberty ceremonies in 1886. Thousands of people crowded onto ships in the harbor to watch the great event. Thousands of others crowded the shorelines around the harbor. Everyone cheered wildly when a signal was given and a huge cloth fell from the statue. Lady Liberty stood holding her torch high for freedom. Under her feet were the broken chains of tyranny. Below the statue was a poem. It called to the poor and oppressed people of the world. It told them to come to America to find a land of hope and freedom.
Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shores. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door.
The Statue of Liberty was a great success. It was one of the great engineering wonders of its time, and it filled Americans with pride in their tradition of freedom and openness to people from all lands.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.